Yeah, so I'd like to thank to be included in that program, and also I'd like to thank Tom, Matteo, and the others for organizing this whole program here, which I think is very interesting and stimulating. So it's the second time that I'm here. So there's Vanessa, who's looking after all these things. No one is really mentioning much. I like to do at this moment. So my talk today is a bit more conceptual, and what I like to do is I like to point out something which is just an empirically stylized fact, that if you use a diversified portfolio, if you form a very diversified portfolio, then this is having really outstanding statistical properties. I like to point out that not only as I am using it here under this benchmark approach in this book and in some of these papers, that such diversified object is having other nice mathematical properties and for modeling financial markets and risk being quite useful. Now, what I like to do this time is I like to say, if you take such diversified portfolio, which I'll describe in more detail later, then very clear statistical analysis can hopefully be done. I give examples. So we use this benchmark approach, and this diversified portfolio is in principle then this object we are talking about, and this benchmark or this numerator portfolio. And what brings us together is the following saying, is a so-called diversification theorem, which works this way, that it says, if you invest small fractions of your wealth in the constituents of your investment universe, you end up, when you make it really up to infinity, you end up with a very clear limit. And this limit is the so-called numerator portfolio. On the next slide, I give a bit more precise definition of it. For those who know the gross optimal portfolio, so the portfolio that maximizes logarithmic utility, it's the same. And so in this way, you know immediately for portfolio optimization, this kind of benchmark, gross optimal portfolio, numerator portfolio, is playing a central role. And not only that, if you go to derivative pricing or pricing of variable annuities in insurance or the long-dated securities, then this numerator portfolio is the ideal numerator. It gives you a way of pricing under the real-world probability, what you statistically observe and model. But all these things is not what I'm really focusing on. The last point, when you have then a proxy for this numerator portfolio, which I will construct and show you, then this has very, very good properties. And they come from the fact that you, in principle, capture the non-diversifiable risk of your investment universe. And for our equity market, it's really, really significant what you see there. And what I'm arguing for is not primarily, or if you have the choice, not primarily looking at stock prices or exchange rates. No. Take whatever you're interested in, maybe Canadian dollar, take this benchmark, this numerator portfolio, this very diversified portfolio, express it in units of Canadian dollar, and look what it is doing. Also analyze statistically, and you will be surprised what beautiful, clear statistical properties it will have. Because all this diversifiable risk, which is non-systematic, and which is not really the feedback which economically drives them in principle the economy, this non-diversifiable risk is very clear and nice. So let's just have a bit of formulas here, and we take observation times discrete. You can really think of having any kind of model, discrete time or continuous time. The supermartingale property under this benchmark approach is a key thing. It's more or less a definition of the numerator portfolio. Denote by S delta star the numerator portfolio. Then the key property in a financial market, any reasonable market, also classical no arbitrage, and beyond that, when you have even no equivalent risk neutral martingale measure, it's all under this umbrella here. So you take a non-negative portfolio, benchmark it, that means express it in units of the numerator portfolio. This, its benchmark current value will be greater or equal than the real world condition expectation taken at time tn, under the information at time tn, of future benchmark values. So this super martingale property is a key thing. It more or less expresses the fact that this numerator portfolio is, in this sense, the best performing portfolio, because it forces any other portfolio in the long term downwards, or if it is a very nice portfolio what you have here, you might have equality that the martingale. But otherwise, this is a structural thing. So from that, you can derive also a pricing rule, because I said risk-neutral pricing also may not be possible. So these martingales in your world of portfolios and benchmark are, of course, very special. They are the minimal processes that give you some future payoffs. So, but I'm not talking about this here, just for comment. So now I'd like to give you the idea where this diversification effect is really coming from. We know, and mankind knows for centuries, diversification is, for risk management, more or less the only real thing what you really can do. And here, let me just intuitively, with a few formulas, show you how it works out. Also, I think intuitively for many it's clear the law of large numbers has to do with diversification, but how it really does it, at least it was not clear to me before I did this kind of work. So what we are doing now is we take primary security accounts, so think of stocks, total return, and benchmark these. Make us a little bit of structure, so that say the return of this benchmark primary security we design in such a way that we have something like a volatility type thing, but it could be even the driving process could have jumps, levy or whatever. And here's the increment of some driving processes. So delta psi k is the increment of it. For simplicity, you may just think here's the increment of a Wiener process, if you like to see that. Good. Then, for instance, in jump diffusion markets, we know that when you write down the SDE, so the benchmark primary security account, they're all local martingales driftless. Okay, let me just do for the moment here over this small time and our conditional expectation of the increment of these driving processes, say like linear processes, to zero, and make for different K this principle uncorrelated. So what you have then here is driving your return. It's still relatively, I would say, model independent. It's just saying there are sources of uncertainty and they are transformed via volatility type things into the returns. So now, without going, later there will be more slides, but just let me explain here where diversification is really coming from. It's so simple. If you have now these returns of benchmark primary security accounts, they are in principle driftless, also expectation zero for the moment here, and assume the following very simple thing. Look, all these general market risks, systemic risks, sits already in this index. So what you do, you benchmark. So what you see more or less the idiosyncratic risks or the specific risk of each of the securities. So for simplicity, assume at the moment these all here, these returns, benchmark returns, are all independent for the different J's. That means there's only one, so the KK may be coming up, just for simplicity. So then it's clear to you that, assuming a finite second moment, that when you take an equal value weighted portfolio, so take the same fractions, so the naivest form of diversification, the same fractions of this, you get a new portfolio out, which this equal value weighted portfolio will just average over these returns. These returns have mean zero and are independent. So it's just an average over independent random variables. So it's the simplest, the most basic thing we have in probability, which puts probability, econometric statistics, all this together. It's the law of large numbers. So take now a weak law of large numbers, and what you have is that the sum, this weighted sum of these returns, these random variables, independent, mean zero, it will converge towards the zero return. So what means zero return? Zero return means that you approach a process where the benchmark value is just more or less one. So that means you approach the numerator portfolio. So by diversification, just by this very simple, most basic, robust argument in probability and statistics, you have the effect that by diversification, this very robust, model independent, by diversification, you get an object that when benchmarked is just a constant one. So, and this is a numerator portfolio, I wrote it just here down. So in this way, you have a very, very stable, robust phenomenon, and no model so far, in principle, implemented. So now let's, I just say a little bit more here about this, how one could formulate it, and so in this type of result, diversification theorems are in my papers and books, but here's a later version which comes up very soon. You take a sequence of benchmarked portfolios, strictly positive, let these returns here, benchmark returns, converge, say, in probability to zero, and you need a little bit of structure to do that all correct, so some regularity, but it is trivial in principle. So look for the volatility with respect to a given noise source, here the case one, sum them all up, and normalize it by 1 over square root of L. If this is getting still small, then I call these markets regular or semi-regular. And for instance, if you have just the sigma kk in it, or this independent case, what I was thinking, of course, then you have sigma kk over square root of L, and of course, this is becoming small when L is getting very large. So, and then the diversification theorem in principle says the following. Take a regular, similar regular market, take an equally weighted index, so a naive portfolio, and then such a sequence or such equally weighted indices for larger and larger markets. It's just approximating the numerator portfolio. This is general, you can take any kind of model. So that means this naive portfolio, equally weighted portfolio, which I'm focusing on now, is playing a really a major role, and we can construct now these things. So let's make an experiment. And actually, I'm doing at the moment a lot of experiments with more or less the whole investment universe that we have. But this is something which goes back to some work with Chuck Lee. We take, and you can do that, you go down to data stream, download the total return world industry subsector indices. They are there. You just can then take. There are 114 today. At that time, there were 104. And form the market capitalization weighted index. Data stream tells you also the market capitalization for each of them. And you find this here. And this is the almost exactly the MSCI, also the market capitalization weighted index of the market. Then take the same securities and do this equal value weighting each day. And you get this here, the red one. This is the equal value weighted index. So what you see already, we now numerate portfolios better performing than anything else. You see this better performance, but you can't see what I show you later. This is having statistically much clearer properties than what we have here, where there are big industries like banking, finance, you know, 20% in the US or so, or big countries like the US and Japan. This is just not diversified, really. However, here. So let me go then. Let's look for some facts in these minutes. Let's go for the very simplest question. What are the log returns? What is the log return distribution? And Ole Barnoff-Nielsen had a very nice class of generalized hyperbolic distribution developed. We used it with Simon Harris already in the mid-90s to look at log returns. I had these ideas at that time, and we did just for regional indices, and something really good came out. But only now with this work here and what is just coming in the next few months, it becomes very, very much, much clearer. So we have the symmetric generalized hyperbolic density, one parameter is alpha bar, and lambda is another one. These are the tail parameters. We like to look at these. Two likelihood ratio tests. Remember here, 2 times 10 to the minus 6 is more or less where your statistics has to be below that to have a 99.9 significance level. We take data, daily log returns, and denominated in 27 currencies of this equal value weighted index, and do the following. Shift them all, also country by country, to its center, so that's zero, sample mean, and scale it also that variance becomes one. And put them one over the other. By this you get for the 27 countries from 1973 until 2006, you got 200,000 data points, which is an enormous number to do statistics with. So we do that. Here's a histogram over this. It's a logarithmic and here 0, 1, and so on. You see that very, very nice fit of this red curve already visually. It's a student t distribution with 4 degrees of freedom. Here it's a likelihood log likelihood function. Here it is, what I said, alpha bar parameter, lambda parameter, and you see clearly the maximum, very flat, fits here. So here would be the variance gamma model, variance gamma return. Here would be the hyperbolic. Here would be the non-inverse Gaussian on this line, and on this negative axis, the student t. So it sits pretty much almost exactly at minus 2, where the maximum sits. So lambda, so here minus 2 lambda is the degrees of freedom of the student t distribution which comes up. So this would be t4 distribution. And this is a stylized fact. I show you here, this is for the 200,000, these statistics. So it's much, much smaller than which 99.9 would. And then I go over all the countries. All the countries have, in principle, the significance. Only Brazil and Renata Rendeck, who did this, ask what is going on. It's suddenly different, but we were very pleased about all this. And then it turned out she had only 5 years, and the other had more than 30 years, typically. So it was this effect. You could look at now at squared volatilities for such an index. And the inverse of the squared volatility, if you plot the histogram, another stylized fact, we see very clearly it's gamma distributed with 4 degrees of freedom, which of course you would expect when you have the mixing. So here's a quadratic variation of log squared volatility. So now let's go to something else in my last 5 minutes. Wolfgang Weimann, we did another thing. We worked on intraday data, had an equivaluated index. This is Olsen's data. Now I have better data. We worked on this equivaluated index, which I showed you. And we took simply, because we had nothing else, from the S&P 500 monthly data as far as I was able to get back, so around 1920. So what was the aim of this study? I wanted to ask what is happening with the expected return of an index when you take here the Q's moment and have here the step size, which we will go from intraday now to monthly and more, and look what is in principle here, this exponent, and it would be in principle Q times H, where H would be the Hurst exponent if you go in principle along the lines of a lot of research, also what is done in econophysics. Although let's find out. If Q is 1, H should be a half, if we want to apply the more or less our diffusion type arguments and modeling. So Wolfgang Weimann did here this linear ansatz. And what comes out is this kind of graph here. What is it showing? It's showing here this moment, this Q, and it's showing here the Hurst exponent as it would come out. If it would be linear, it would be really nice. And if it would be a half, so on these lines here, then it would be a diffusion process. But what you find for this equal value weighting, which is different step sizes from intraday up to months or more, you find very clearly that you have for daily and intraday these things go linear, almost linear for all these different moments, but higher than this, what Hurst exponents a half would tell us. So it's more, it's about 0.55, 0.6. But the nice thing is, it's straight, it's monoscaling. So you find in works by Calvi Fischer and all those who followed also Mandelbrot that you have, in principle, some scaling, but a half, in finance, more than a half. But then you find, like this here, when you do it for exchange rates, let me get for the next, like this here, you find these curves come down. They are not straight lines. Yeah, they are really. So, and then there's an effort to try to model this. And I'm saying no. First, the statistical effects here for equivaluated indices, very diversified, straight lines. And it's a bit more. Now, the question is how we model it. I'm not talking about this here. So it could be, some would say, blue fractional Pauli motion or so. Let's leave it open. It's just a fact. So, what you can find by looking at diversified indices, so like this here now, as I say, are the proxies of this numerator portfolio, you find empirical stylized facts which are much clearer and stronger than what you typically can see. And for instance, let's look at this question, how would I say model the exchange rate Australian dollar, Canadian dollar? I would take this equivalue weighted index, look at it in Canadian dollar, model what I see. So this is local terms and find a model. Do the same thing for the same index, denominated in Australian dollar, find their model, I can get this student key very clear. Look at, of course, what correlations are necessary in this model, so we have nice talks on this in this conference here. And then have each modeled, and the exchange rate will be simply the ratio of my denomination of this equivalue weighted index in Canadian dollar over the same index but denominated and modeled for the Australian denomination. So in this I can do for any stock price, would be so like IBM shares or Microsoft shares against US dollar, it would be the same story. But not looking at IBM shares or Microsoft shares, just in US dollar. I cannot hope for this. There will be what Microsoft affects and what US dollar affects, and it will be mixed, and I have no hope ever to disentangle it. But in this way, there's a very good chance to disentangle it, and this is in principle my message to say also the econometric colleagues, that there's a chance that we can do better with the techniques we have. Thank you.